I'm always intrigued by how people got started in their interest in mathematics in particular. So if you can first just say where you grew up, and then what your first experience with mathematics was.
So I grew up in Silver Spring, Maryland, not very far from College Park, on a small street that had 13 houses, of which five had mathematicians in them. My parents were both physicists. My dad was a nuclear physicist at Catholic University, and my mom was a solar astrophysicist at Goddard Space Flight Center. Other people say things like, oh, that's not rocket science. My mom was a rocket scientist, literally. So in some ways you could say I just couldn't get away from it. I mean, talking about how did I encounter math for me is like for most people talking about how did they encounter, you know, food. I grew up with it. It was part of the culture. And now my sisters, one of them has a master's degree in physics, the other has a master's degree in operation research. So you can see that it continues to be in the culture. In spite of all that, when I look back at it, I'm sort of surprised at how often I needed nudging and encouragement from lots of people around me. I remember in seventh grade coming home from school and saying to my dad, I can't do word problems, I hate word problems. And having him say, oh, I love word problems, because everybody else gets stuck on them, but if you just keep going, then you can be better than everybody else because you can do it. And I hated it when he would say things like that. But he really, he helped, he encouraged a lot. He both my parents pushed me and my sisters to take as many math classes as we could. I went to college knowing for sure that what I wanted to do was to major in foreign languages so that I could become a Washington, D.C. tour guide. And that was why I chose Bryn Mawr, because they were really good at languages. And my dad encouraged me to take one last math class, which I did. I took Calculus 3, figuring that would be the end of math.
In high school or
in college?
In college.
At Bryn Mawr. When I got to Bryn Mawr, I took one last math class, and that was with Mario Martelli, who has since moved out to California. He won their section teaching award, and he's been the governor there. He had a huge influence on me. It was he who took me aside during that class and said, Annalisa, you are very good. You should take PDEs. And I said, isn't that for seniors? And he said, yes, but you are very good. Take it. And so I took that my second semester of my freshman year. And that was when the switch finally turned over and there was no looking back. I knew I wanted to do math. I became a math major. He was the one who took me aside and said, when you apply to graduate schools, let me know, because I want to write you a letter. And that's when I realized, oh, I guess I'm going to apply to graduate schools. I mean, even with two parents who had PhDs, I had never even thought about that before. So I had a lot of encouragement from a lot of people along the way.
So how did you pick your graduate school?
It was actually, I was getting married at the time, and I wanted to, it was a small list because it was places that both my fiancé and I were going to go to. And I actually started off at a graduate school in Cambridge, Massachusetts, that started with an H, and I lasted one semester there before freaking out. And again, my dad said, don't give up. Go audit at classes at Brown, which is where my husband was. We actually started off in different grad schools. I audited classes at Brown, found it a really welcoming place, and transferred there. And that's where I got my PhD.
What area was your husband in?
He was computer science.
And Brown had a really good computer science school, too. So now were you in a two-body problem? Or
by the time I was in graduate school, the two bodies, I had been divorced, and so the two bodies were me and my daughter. So I was actually a single mom when I started at Franklin Marshall, or a divorced mom.
So was it a direct transition from Brown to Franklin and Marshall?
Yeah. I graduated from Brown in 1992, which was just when everybody was starting to realize that the job situation was going to be serious. I don't know if you remember, but during the late 80s, everybody thought that there was going to be so many jobs for mathematicians, and everybody kept saying, well, next year will be the year when they finally all open up. And 92 was not only obviously a really bad job year, but also the year that everybody who was applying for jobs discovered print merge, which we hadn't known existed before then. And so people were applying to 200 places. I decided I really wanted to be at a small liberal arts college on the East Coast. That was really important to me, and I applied to 60 places, 60 places. And my advisor sort of freaked out a little bit and encouraged me to double that number, and I just decided that I knew what I wanted and that this is what I was going to do. And I ended up being really fortunate. I got my first place, my first choice job at a place that seemed to really love me. And so
what was the attraction of Franklin and Marshall?
Part of it was the kinds of things that a lot of schools say, that they really care about students, they really care about teaching. They also cared about supporting ongoing research, which I knew I really wanted to do. I think lots of schools say that. There were ways that Franklin and Marshall consistently demonstrated that. The librarians hold office hours for my students. The librarians help me find stuff for my research. So it was... it was a really good place. It was a friendly place. It was a supportive place. One of the things that actually made a really big difference for me, especially back in 1992, was that there was an on-site daycare, which I couldn't have done it without that as a single mom. And it's an affordable location. I could raise my daughter there. I could buy a house there as a single mom. So.
Now, you mentioned you were interested in continuing to do research. What area were you... interested in?
I've done work that has varied over time. My thesis was actually in nonlinear PDEs, and so I looked at a fourth order wave equation and showed that there are an infinite number of solutions, but I'm a pure mathematician, so I have no idea what any of those solutions look like. I just know they exist. But immediately after that, I switched into dynamical systems. I was really heavily influenced by an MAA workshop that I had been to when I was still a graduate student. Bob Devaney had led that up in Maine, up near Arcadia, and decided that this was what I wanted to do, that I knew that I could start it myself and continue it with students. So I've been working not so much in complex dynamical systems, in topological dynamical systems, with a real strong emphasis on topology. That MAA workshop that I went to with Devaney convinced me actually that I wanted to go to other local MAA meetings, and I went to one close to Brown where I got to meet David Pengelly, who actually also recently won a teaching award, and that got me really interested in issues of teaching writing in the classroom. So that's not a mathematical research area, but that's also something that I do a lot of. And both of those directions were really started for me while I was in graduate school by going to local MAA things.
Always a good sign. How have... I assume you also, or I'm guessing that you also enjoy the teaching part too.
Yeah.
That gets you very excited, and you love the interactions with students.
You know, there are like 85 million different careers that I've wanted to have over my life. One of the things that I wanted to do, because I got to go to NASA with my mom, was to become a Xeroxer, because they had these new Xerox machines. And another thing I wanted to do, because I went to NASA with my mom, was to become a cafeteria worker, because I would help the cafeteria ladies clean the tables. But one of the things that I really wanted to do when I was young was to become an actress. And my parents actually sent me off to acting camp very often. And and I think that teaching mathematics allows me to combine my acting skills, my love of math. I mean, you know, at 8 in the morning, you have to somehow be passionate about the chain rule. And I like I like that. I like the fact that at a small place like Franklin and Marshall, I start with students who, you know, the first day of class don't even know whether they're supposed to take note in pencil mm-hmm. or pen. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the 4 years, they become my colleagues. They mm-hmm. they publish with me. Mm-hmm. And I love to see that transition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And on the professional side, you were an MA governor. Mm-hmm. In what directions are you interested in? Well, have you gone and are interested in going further?
Yeah, I've done a lot of work with the MAA and the mm-hmm. AMS. With the AMS more than the MAA, I've worked a lot on issues of professional development, starting careers, how to mm-hmm. find jobs in mathematics, mm-hmm. how to keep those going. And I love mentoring young mathematicians. Mm-hmm. I also am increasingly thinking about issues of mathematics internationally. It's mm-hmm. what you and I were just talking about, mm-hmm. that it really seems like that things globally are changing so much, mm-hmm. and American mathematicians, like Americans just in general, are very much caught up in what we're mm-hmm. doing here.
Right.
And I would really love to start thinking about what happens outside of our borders mm-hmm. and how do we share that information with people mm-hmm. here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I say that, but I'm completely ignorant. That's the next big thing I could.
But open to learning.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. One of the interests that you've picked up along the way is in mathematics and art.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about?
It was a circuitous route. Back in the 90s, when I was in graduate school, because people were very worried about not having enough mathematicians. People started taking the issues of encouraging women to go into math and encouraging mm-hmm. minorities of both genders to go into math much more seriously, not just as a do-good kind of thing mm-hmm. for the people, but for mathematics itself. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading studies about how people learned mathematics and how mm-hmm. Tangible math was mm-hmm. was easier for people to learn. And when I moved to Franklin and Marshall, there were a lot of quilts in our museum, so I mm-hmm. I could use those to start teaching subjects of abstract algebra. On one of my mini sabbaticals, I got to go to Indiana University, and they were applying for a Math Across the Curriculum grant. The mm-hmm. idea was to teach to team up a mathematician mm-hmm. with an X, a mathematician with a historian, or mathematics, mm-hmm. a mathematician and biologist. And I got in on that, teamed up with a man, Mark France, who is mm-hmm. both a mathematician and an artist. And he started looking at questions that had arisen for him when he was in art school, like, how do you draw a cube? And started to think about them really seriously. And I mm-hmm. quickly tossed the abstract algebra and the quilts and moved over into perspective geometry.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seemed to me that there were some really rich mathematics that very few mathematicians and very few artists actually knew, and mm-hmm. it was a good field to move into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You also have an interest in journals, writing,
mm-hmm.
editing, publishing, all of those things too.
Yeah.
So you talked about your interest in getting your students to mm-hmm. write even for their math classes.
When I was a kid growing up, my mom used to go to visit schools and talk about what does it take to become a physicist, mm-hmm. what does it take to become a rocket scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she expected a lot of people to say, you need physics.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, what she would say is, you need lots of math mm-hmm. and you need lots of writing.
Mm-hmm.
She would actually had a box that she would carry with her, and she'd say, inside this box is my most important tool as a physicist. And she would have people guess what it was. And mm-hmm. students were, you know, they were just awful at guessing. You know, it was a small box, but they would say a telescope or a microscope. I don't know how mm-hmm. to study this stuff with a microscope. It was a telephone. For her, communication was one of the most important tools that a scientist
mm-hmm.
had.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked that up from her. One of the many things that I wanted to do in addition to being an actress and in a cafeteria worker was to be
mm-hmm.
an English teacher. I love gerunds and participles.
Mm-hmm. And
so.
You continue to
And I continue
Work
to love gerunds
things.
And participles.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah,
uh-huh.
yeah. So, and working with my students. And it's a lot of fun to teach my students to become good writers. I think that my students are willing to believe me if I tell them that even though I teach them what the derivative of x to the 7 is, nobody will ever in the rest of their life ask them, what is the derivative of x to the 7? But people will ask them to take technical material and explain it to a non-technical audience. And so when I teach that in my math classes, that's another way of making what they're learning tangible.
Now, you went through graduate school in the early 90s. From discussions I've had with others and so on, that was still, especially in graduate school, still a tough time for women in many places. It wasn't, there were still barriers. There were still people.
Intentional or unintentional. Yeah. I mean, when I was fortunate to go to college at a women's college. I went to Bryn Mawr, which was incredibly supportive. And by the way, my daughter is at Bryn Mawr right now, and on my way down here, she called me up and was asking me questions about Cauchy sequences on the red line and whether they all converge. So this is, like I told you, this is part of my culture.
Yes.
I'm going. It was a real culture shock for me going from Bryn Mawr to Harvard, partly because at Harvard there were 50 graduate students, of whom three were women, and you know, it doesn't matter how nice you are, you're still, how nice everybody else is, I was still all alone feeling there. There were different ways of talking at Bryn Mawr and at Haverford. At Bryn Mawr, because we were all women, we would sit around with our math homework and say, oh God, I'm so stupid, oh me, I'm so stupid too, and then we would do our math. And I tried that once at Harvard, and it didn't go over well because people would believe me. Oh, well, if you're stupid, let me help you. No, that's not what you're supposed to say. So I never felt like people were trying to discourage me. I felt actually like people were trying to encourage me. But I really loved when I was at Brown the fact that it was more than 10% female. That when I started there, 6 of the 36 graduate students were women, that there were female professors that I could go talk to if I needed to. That small increase made a big difference in the atmosphere overall.
To sort of start wrapping this up a little bit, where do you see yourself 10 years from now?
You know, one of the things that I loved about being about turning 40 was watching all my students who didn't know what they wanted to do with their lives and thinking, no, I know what I want to do. This is it. This is what I want to do. And then I became this thing called a house don at Franklin & Marshall, which got me started in administration. And now I'm like my students. I'm not entirely sure what I want to do with the rest of my life. I want to keep doing math. But I'm also feeling like there's something bigger out there, and I haven't figured out what it is yet.
So still looking.
I don't know.
Just to bring it sort of more immediately, are there particular fun projects that you're working on now?
Right now, I am working on, I want to reimagine how we look at projective geometry. Projective geometry started in the 1600s as a way to try to draw this three-dimensional world we live in on a two-dimensional canvas, and it's become very abstract. And I want to take Coxeter's book and completely redo projective geometry, talking really about it as an applied math book, not an abstract math book, but as applied math book. How do we draw the world with projective geometry? That's what we're doing right now. Mark France and I and some others.
So a book coming.
Yeah, we're hoping. That's the big project right now.
Thank you.
Thank you.